Well, welcome to our May Women's Breakfast. Lovely to see you all. And the theme for this year, for 2015, is the good life. Today we're going to hear from Sue McConachie about the good mind, how to keep our minds sharp. And I don't know about you, but as I get older, mine's getting duller and duller. So I'm looking forward to what I'm going to hear this morning.
Hello, thanks for having me. Would you believe I was thinking about things about memory have been very much on my mind over the last few weeks, but I was rather shocked when I realised I roared out of the house today in exactly the same dress that I wore last time I was here. So there you go.
We all noted that.
Well, yeah, yeah, didn't you know that? I just think it's really funny. This is obviously my going to speak at EV dress. You know, I was thinking, now I'm going to put that down a bit more. Today's going to be very interesting. I guess I would encourage you to look, as usual, I'm going to have a bet both ways. I'm going to tell you that we actually know a lot about how to have a healthy mind and a good brain, and to look after our ability to think and to process information. And we also, it's a huge area. There's so many more things we need to know. The funny thing is that we often don't do the things we know. So I will encourage you, if you're not normally a note taker, and I know you've all got a piece of paper in front of you now, so you can always turn it over, might I encourage you today just to experiment with doing things you normally wouldn't do. Doing things that you normally wouldn't do is actually very good for your mind. Your mind loves stimulation and loves a challenge. But the other thing we do know is that when it comes to memory, and that we do know an awful lot about improving our memories or keeping things in our minds, and one is a really simple one, and that is actually taking notes. Now, that doesn't mean you ever have to look at them again, because it is the process of taking notes, of engaging your mind in that process, which seems to be the trick. And I'm sure you've all heard that a million times, but don't you think it's interesting that we often don't do the things we actually know that work? So, again, you don't have to, you know, but again, just allow yourself to think about some different things. So today, there's a bunch of things I'd like to go through. One is I do want to share with you, I guess, some of the psychology stuff on healthy minds, healthy brains, because that is sort of my area. Then I'm going to share with you another bit which is part of my area as a psychologist, and that is the conundrum of if we do know things about how to have a healthy mind, how come we don't do them? And why can't we actually use some of the psychology that we know will help us do it to get us to do it? Then I thought I would go a little bit nuts and share with you some of the free association I had with this when I was thinking about, well, when it comes to my spiritual practices, and for me that means being a Christian, what would happen if I actually took some of this healthy mind stuff seriously? Would it change the way that I read the Bible and the way that I go to church at all? So, you know, whatever you do, I do not want a phone call from your pastor after this, all right? So you remember I'm just sharing with some crazy stuff. And then if we have time, we might be able to have some questions or whatever. So that's where I'm going. There's so much I could go to from here. The other thing is I'm going to go from mind to brain, a smidgen sort of, I'm going to use concepts a little bit messily. The reason for that is that they are connected. I've spent my life now, isn't that amazing? Where does the time go? But, you know, I studied psychology as a young 17 and a half year old, leaving home and doing a degree. So that's a long time ago now. So I really have spent my life in this area. And there's been enormous numbers of changes in terms of the way we think about the mind and the brain. But I'm going to use them a bit interchangeably, and I've been trying to work out how to explain that to you. And the best thing I can come up with is remembering what it was like for us when we had those storms recently. So if you think, do you remember how what it was like? We all sort of survived, but we couldn't do the things we normally do terribly well because we were either without power or had to think about how to get work differently because there were trees across the road, all those sorts of things. So if you think about the mind and the brain is a bit like being, there's you and you live in a house. And if a house is working well, like if you have running water and you have electricity, then you're able to be more efficient. You actually live differently. As soon as you don't have those things, You still manage, but it's not the same and possibly somewhat more stressful. And I'm actually thinking that the mind and the brain are a smidgen like that, not perfect. So the brain is sort of like the house. It's the physical stuff and all the water and electricity that we have. And the mind is a bit like us who lives in that. So, again, you might find them a bit messy at this stage, and sometimes I'll talk about the brain and sometimes I'll talk about the mind, but they really do interact. And that is really important. Going back to being a psychologist forever, it seems, is that that probably wasn't as clear to me when I first went into psychology. I actually thought in a way that, well, if we take care of the mind, it's got nothing to do with the body. And that's actually not true, which is really hilarious, isn't it, when you think about it, but we're wrong. And if you actually think that looking after your mind means that you can just forget about your body, then what we're actually finding out now is that you're wrong. And they're both ways. And the other thing, of course, is that to look after your body, you need to have a good mind. You've actually got to use your mind for what it's for, which is problem solving and making decisions and being intentional and planning, because they're all the things that your mind does. So there you go. That's where we're going. So mind versus brain, what are we talking about there? I could have talked about so many things today. I actually thought about talking about more miserable psychological stuff, things like the impact of memories and events, because we do know that there are some events in our lives or experiences that we would rather forget, but they keep coming back. And that one of our big problems with our mind sometimes is that we do ruminate. We go around and around and around, and we get involved in circular thinking. We think the same thoughts over and over again. And even in preparation for today, I was a little frustrated to find myself awake at 3:30 in the morning thinking about work on Monday. What's that got to do with anything? So sometimes our big problems with our minds is that they're full of stuff we actually don't want to think about. Then you've got the other problem, is that forgetting thing. And how come we can't remember the things we want to remember? And isn't that annoying? And I'm just looking around at those of you here, and there's a number of us here who have more lines in our faces than we had last year. The thought of dementia, and I think there was a lot of news reports this last week about the rising possibility of dementia, and every time we do forget something, we worry about that. And why do we forget things when we're under pressure? That will also come, and because I work in cancer care now, sometimes people's greatest concerns is they drove here but they can't remember how they got here, and that really worries them. So we end up with, we forget stuff. And then we have that sort of thoughts-feelings connection, which again is very much part of what I do, is how thoughts and feelings seem to influence each other. Even waking up at 3:30 in the morning didn't actually surprise me too much. I've got a lot on at the moment. It was just annoying. And I actually think that's quite helpful. Now, if it bothered me that I woke up at 3:30 in the morning, I'd be having a whole lot of other worries that would be then adding to my life. So we know that there's a thoughts-feelings connection, and they influence each other as well. And then there is a lot to do with, well, how do we think, how do we process our relationship with God? And if you actually just use any kind of shortcut to, if you just sort of put in a Google search engine or something for mind of Christ or the mind of God in the Bible, you'll get a heap of stuff back. So even if we're looking at this in terms of just our spirituality, our walk with God, what does it mean to be a spiritual person? The Bible is full of promises and exhortations to take care of your mind. And there are some, I've got them actually in King James because I just think it rolls lovely. Like, thou dost keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on thee because he trusts in thee. And I find that those things are just so helpful sometimes. The whole of the first commandments, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul and with all thy mind. And even just how we should live. Have this mind among yourselves, which is yours in Christ Jesus. And set your mind on things that are above, not on things on earth. And the peace of God, which passes all understanding, will keep your hearts and your minds in Christ. And they're just a selection. So couldn't we have some fun if we decided we were just going to reflect on those sorts of things and learn from them. So, if anybody here ever read any of Dr. Carl, I think it's Krzyzelnicki, I can't say his last name, read any of his books? Every now and again, I think I'd like to be Dr. Carl, you know. I admire his mind. I don't agree with everything he says, but I love the way that he puts things together. So I thought, first of all, I read some of his books just to have some fun with this. No, I thought, no, I just can't tell you all the wacky stuff he comes up with. But there was one I thought I'd share with you, because memory is a big deal when you're talking about having a good mind. And a lot of us here would be thinking, how can we look after ourselves and have a memory? And I'll just read out just this hilarious thing which he talks about. He looks at some research on forgetting and actually suggests that it's the doorway that's the problem. And so I actually think this is a funny one, so I'll give you an idea about this. What he actually said is that, have you ever gotten from one room to the other in the house and you've suddenly forgotten what you're going for? And that can be such a worry, can't it? Every now and again I have people turn up and say, I'm just forgetting stuff. I'm going to think, okay. So we then take the list, and often they aren't forgetting stuff, but they're either in high stress, or there are things that the way the mind works or the way the brain works that we just don't know. And that's why Dr. Carl is actually doing us a good favour by sharing with us in a very easy way some of the research. So he quotes, this is in his book, 50 Shades of Grey Matter, which is a little bit old now. But he actually looked at some research about memory. And in this study, he actually had volunteers who had to remember different shapes and colours. So it was a pretty boring task, really, but there were shapes and colours, 60 items. Oh, just the mere thought of it puts me off. But the first one was that he had people with there was a screen on a computer screen, and the volunteers would pick up any one of the items from a table and put it on another table. This is all on a screen. And then it would vanish into a virtual backpack so they couldn't see it anymore. And then sometimes on the screen, the table that they placed things on was in the same room, and sometimes it was in a different room. And if they had to go, this is the funny thing, is that even virtually, if they had to go through a doorway into a different room, like carried the thing through the doorway into the other room, they were more likely to forget what they were carrying. Wow, so that was interesting. But then they tried it in real time as well, which was our normal lives. So the real experiment was, it was exactly the same. There were real items, real tables and rooms, and it was exactly the same. If you walked through the doorway, so it didn't matter whether it was a virtual doorway, like, you know, just watching a story on a screen, or a real doorway, you exactly had the same thing. If you walked through the doorway, you had more memory lapses. Doesn't that make you feel normal? Yeah. So that was very interesting, because then you got this hilarious idea that it's a doorway, you know, that you go through the doorway and it sucks it out of you or somehow. And then they tried it again, but on the third time through, they had the volunteers going through the doorways and then back to the room they started in. You know, so you'd take the object through the doorway, then back again. But it wasn't the room. It was going through the doorway. They forgot. So what does this mean? Well, I'm just telling you the bleeding obvious. Memory is really, really complicated, and we don't know everything. And so people have actually thought about this a bit. They're trying to work out what the heck it is about the doorway that makes us forget. At the moment, this is the theory, it probably has to do with paying attention to whatever you're doing, is that usually when we go from one context to another, what we're planning to do changes. I mean, he's a great believer in that sort of evolutionary stuff. I don't quite agree with his reasoning on this, but I do agree that if you're going from one environment to the next environment, you might want to if you have, say, killer gorillas in one environment and then you're going to move to where there are horrible lions, you're best to forget the gorillas and concentrate on the lions. Does that make sense? So if you're going through doorways or you're changing tack, you're going from home to work or from one place to another, don't beat yourself up. It's actually pretty normal for you to forget, because you're just sort of slotting stuff into the background. So I thought that was quite comforting, really, don't you? But the reason for me telling you that is that this is much more complicated than you think when it comes to just memory. We are also finding, now there's sort of good news and bad news. There's a bunch of information around now on improving memory and memory strategies, and I am going to come back to that in a minute. But I also wanted to share with you some of the most important things when it comes to improving memory. And this came out of some stuff in Alzheimer's Australia in 2013. And this is the really weird one, and I think you're all going to have to come to next breakfast, not next week. Because what they found, and this is the dirty secret and means that I'm probably out of a job, is that it's physical activity which enhances brain plasticity and the growth and survival of brain cells. Wow. So, great thing to do, puzzles, but go for a walk first. So the theory is, and they've looked at this, and they're still trying to work out exactly how much activity. It seems to be something like regular, moderate intensity physical activity, and it's looking at people who are inactive. That's all the research is on, people who actually really do very, very little, like sit a heck of a lot. And then, so it's about those two differences. There's a very good chance that most of you here are moderately active, because I mean you're here. All right, so we're talking. So don't take it too much. But if you're really thinking about taking care of your mind, then you need to remember that your mind exists in a body, and the mind, the muscle for the mind, is the brain. It's not the only muscle for the mind, but it's a pretty major one. So if you're going to have a healthy mind, then you need to remember that it's all connected. Why is that? Well, simple things, and I've simplified this because I am a psychologist. The health of the blood vessels in the brain is vital to brain function. So there's all this stuff swimming around, and we need to keep everything moving in order to have that health. It's not only so things like diseases and conditions, diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, obesity, all can damage blood vessels. And when that happens, you end up with vascular disease. Is that clear, doctors? Something like that. It's simple. If you do that, then we have to actually take care of the blood vessels. How do you take care of the blood vessels? And again, a lot of research being done on that, and some things that we can't always control as much as we can, and I am just so grateful for modern medicine, and that some of the problems that I know that I am going to face, there are medications that will help. But the other thing is that the missing link is that exercise thing. What kind of exercise? Okay, if you're thinking blood flow and cognitive function, go for walking, jogging, swimming, cycling, that kind of thing. Anything gets the blood moving. If it's about things like risk of dementia and type 2 diabetes, have a think about strength training. Okay, I wonder what that will mean. Does that mean that when we go today, everybody moves their own chair? You know, I mean, I don't know. Yeah. So when it comes to memory, we'll talk about the little strategies and tricks because I think they're important. But what if we actually took that big finding seriously, that we actually need to move, that we cannot forget that our minds exist in a body, and then if we want good mind function, then think about all the pipes and all the circulatory problems which will keep a healthy mind, healthy body. I'm going to talk a little bit about that in a minute. I'm also going to mention neuroplasticity. Isn't that a great word, neuroplasticity? And I don't know if any of you had a chance to see, what's his name? All of the Mosleys, but, you know, I think Norman Doidge, his book, The Brain That Changes Itself. He's here for the Sydney Writers Festival. He's got a new book out. There was a TV series called Retrain Your Brain last year, and there's going to be another one soon. This is fascinating stuff, and this really has moved and changed in the last 40 or 50 years. So it is very exciting. So with neuroplasticity, what we're actually thinking of, and I used to tell my children, I've got to go and apologise to them now, is that when they were growing up, I said, you cannot drink alcohol because it'll ruin it'll destroy your brain cells. And what we're finding out was if they were smart, they would have come back and said, well, I'll have plenty more and I can actually replenish them and make some new ones. Luckily, they didn't know that, and I didn't know it either. I mean, look, there are some things which will wreck your brain, but we can actually fix things which we never thought could be fixed. I think that's pretty incredible. It's not easy, by the way. If any of you have experienced some kind of brain injury or know someone with a brain injury, this is not for the faint-hearted. We're not saying it's a walk in the park. But it's a heck of a lot different from thinking that you just don't have a brain, we can't do anything with your brain anymore, and you cannot think or you cannot use your mind at all. So that's the big shift. that we are capable of learning and we are capable of changing far more than we used to or thought we could. And that is just amazing. And that's very new research and is well worth looking at. So that means that we can change. So if you're sort of thinking that as you grow old, that you have to put up with dementia, that you have to put up with not functioning well, that's just rubbish. That is actually not true. It might take some work on your part, but your quality of life will be better if you put in the work. So that's just a massive shift. From a psychological point of view, it probably explains why therapy even works at all, by the way. Because one of the things which is very interesting is, why does therapy work? Why does talking with somebody actually make a difference at all? Some of you might have done recovery or would have considered doing recovery. Why is that going to help you? Well, from a physical point of view, it probably helps because you're retraining your brain. So we've got all of these things that are quite different. So we've gone from thinking that the brain is hardwired, that it's like computer hardwire, and that, you know, and that it's very sort of rigid and stuck, to something where that it's more of a dynamic muscle, if you like, and that if one part fails, another part can take over. That idea of the machine metaphor just does not seem to work with what they've actually found about how the mind and the brain works. As an aside, to me, that thinks, well, this is just remarkable. So for any of us who are still sort of trying to work out whether there is any, if there is a spiritual world, is there a God? I keep thinking, again, you've got to be kidding. The more we find out about this stuff, the more it looks towards a great creator, because this is just astounding information about how this fits together. So where am I up to? I told you it was all over the place. I've got all these bits of paper. Because even though apparently I'm very smart, I have trouble with cutting and pasting. That's my next thing to work on, cutting and pasting, but I can only really handle one new computer skill at a time. And I do know, because I'm a psychologist, that once you have the new skill, you have to practice it a real lot, otherwise you'll forget it. So the trouble is that I clearly need to do more talks so that I get better at cutting and pasting. And I think, no, maybe I'll just get someone else to do it for me. Okay. So you've got this sort of mind-body thing. I just wanted to quickly throw in about the stuff that's more normal when you think about psychologists. Is what about poor thinking habits? And I've mentioned them already, is that, you know, thoughts that come and you don't want them to come. We know, for example, that if you're under any kind of stress or pressure, Your memory is probably not going to be that flash, and again, that's a very physical thing. One of the things that this kind of information is particularly helpful when I'm working with men. Women, not so much. I don't know whether we have more of a comfortable relationship with our bodies, and we're more often become more comfortable with this idea that the mind and body are connected. And we'll just solve the problem as it comes. But men seem to find it much easier to cope with kind of mind-body stuff and stress stuff if they know that it's got a physiological base. And one of the things is I find very comforting now is that I don't actually have to sort of make that up or massage the material. I can just point guys to some of the stuff about that mind-body connection and let it speak for itself. So when we're thinking about all or nothing thinking or catastrophizing or how we filter information, even the fact that for me, I was very focused today on realizing that I was wearing the same dress as I wore last time is actually irrelevant. But doesn't that show you how weird the mind is? I haven't thought of that for months. In fact, if I'd thought about it even a day earlier, I would have put something else on. You know, but it's I know that it's not, none of you would have remembered that. So don't you think that's interesting? So here we all are. A lot of us were here in exactly the same place at the same time. Why don't we all remember the same thing? Fascinating. But we do have this problem that we often identify too much with thoughts. One of the other things that's interesting about that mind-body connection is that our mind is good for thinking. Our mind is good for helping us interpret our emotions. It struggles with that stress thing because it will send off a danger signal. The body will send a danger signal to the brain, and sometimes our mind will then think something's happening, something's going on, and then it'll try to work out what's going on, and we don't always get it right. So that's why it's sort of tricky sometimes to use your mind well. But this is the good news. Even when I said that, who is it inside of you that is thinking, something just happened, something's gone wrong, I'm going to have to work on this, or do I need to get out of here? Is something really good? Who's doing that? Your mind is doing it. Your mind can actually reflect on itself. And that's another reason why therapy works, by the way, that incredible ability of human beings to reflect on their minds. So what it means is that even though your emotions and your brain are sending off signals of danger, for example, there's also part of you that is stepping back saying, OK, I'm getting the danger signal, but is it really danger or is it something else? And that's another thing where I think that it's important to know that you actually have that ability to step back and then process it. And that's what your brain is good for. And your mind is there to process it. So in the end, you don't always make decisions on the first thing your body tells you to do. What am I going to use as an example? Okay, let's think about that exercise and movement thing. Say, for example, you're sitting there and thinking, oh, drat. She just said, if I have to have a healthy mind, I'm going to have to exercise more. I hate exercise. I don't feel like it. Yeah. And then you think, well, I'm not going to do it unless I feel like it. And then hopefully your mind will also say, well, now come off the grass. You're perfectly capable of doing things you don't feel like. And then the other thing that your mind is able to do is weigh it up and say, well, how important is it? You know, maybe I don't really believe Sue. Yeah, she's not right. It'll change again. If I just hold off for another 10 years, that'll come up with something else. So you can actually have that conversation coming through your mind. So it's actually a lot going on that you can actually do. Oh, but you might actually say, no, hang on a minute. Said, I want to be able to go for walks down the street. And if I can still walk on the beach, oh, that's really cool. I love walking on the beach. So you might think to yourself, well, if I want to keep walking on the beach, I've got to keep walking on the beach. Right. And then you think to yourself, oh. But, and the other thing which happens and is for women is then think, well, you know, but is that fair on everybody else, you know? Gee, you know, the family's going to suffer if I decide to go for afternoon walks. How awful that would be. How am I going to explain it to my family? Oh, I can't bear it if they think that I'm being silly. Oh, I can't do that. So, again, you've got a whole lot of thoughts, some of which you'll need to keep and some of which are going to be just plain rubbish, really. And that's a wonderful thing that you have a mind and a brain that can reflect back on itself. Does that make sense? As I said, I'm jumping up a little bit. That's another part of this mind-brain-body connection thing. To be able to do that high-level processing, that kind of association of reflecting, making decisions, it helps if you're feeling good. It helps if you're fairly healthy. And I don't know if you've ever tried. Have you ever tried to do that kind of what am I supposed to be doing now thing if you're really, really stressed or if you've got a headache? So we know there's a mind-body connection, don't we? So I'm just saying it again. So we know, for example, that if you are not moving your body, that also affects the way that you'll process things. As another little aside, you see, I'd love to be Dr. Carl. I'd love to share with you some of the information which shows things that if you're really stuck with solving a problem, go for a walk. And just, you know, sometimes the answer will come to you. And I know that some of you have also found that if you work too hard at trying to think of it, you almost have to say, I can't remember your name or I can't remember what we were talking about. Just leave it with me. And sure enough, 20 seconds later, you retrieve it. So there's a whole lot of things, as I said, we already know. I'm not going to spend all this time on this one, but I have mentioned before, as you know, I've been here in the past and I've spoken about depression. That affects both your body, your mind and your soul. Is the other thing which has happened more recently is that exercise keeps coming up is a major strategy for me handling depression. And that again is sort of good news, bad news. The thing with exercise for depression is, does that mean that all the psychologists are going to be out of the job? No. Does it mean that we should be going for walks with our patients? Or is it back to that mind-body connection that the brain is part of it, and that for all of those of you who felt that if you're depressed then there's clearly something wrong with you, you're inadequate as a person, and I'm actually saying is, don't be too hard on yourself. If depression is a helpful strategy, I mean, if exercise is a helpful strategy for depression, doesn't that allude to the fact that depression is somehow connected to our bodies? and our brains as a muscle and how we process information and how we, you know, how all those things fit together. So I don't know the full answers of that, but I'm sort of comforted by that, that maybe we beat each other up far too much when we're just feeling as flat as a tack, have lost hope, and we maybe we should just go for a walk at that stage or have a drink of water and then rethink it. You know, and sometimes that is a good idea. Don't act too quickly. Talking to a cancer patient the other day who does a lot of performance work, and he thought it was ironic, and so did I, the sort of cancer he has is a head and neck cancer. So while he was going through treatment, he actually couldn't eat or talk, and he makes his living by talking. And when he actually got better and he was back doing his work, and then he described the time when he was really beating himself up. He'd done the job, but then he walked away from the job and was reviewing how he went. And, you know, about within 5 minutes of leaving that job, he decided that what he'd done was absolute rubbish. He couldn't possibly do it anymore. It was totally useless, and he was off to the bottle shop to get drunk. And he was very fortunate because a friend of his rang up while he was sitting in the car thinking, I don't know why I bother, this is crazy. And the friend just said, breathe. And for some weird reason, he told me, he did what his friend said and he just breathed for a while. And then he sort of thought, oh, I'm just talking crap to myself. And he didn't go and get drunk. Yay! I mean, so again, I think that's really interesting. So that's very important when your brain, your head is telling you absolute rubbish. Well, just hold off on a little. Maybe go and do something else. And then come back and review what's in your head. Or if you're really lucky, come back and review it with someone you trust and saying, I'm thinking that I've completely stuffed up, for example. Wouldn't it be interesting to hear what somebody else would say about that? And that's where your mind, your brain, your ability to think, to plan, to reflect is your secret weapon, if you like, in this world. Now, okay, memory strategies. And this is a bit of a reminder. I don't know. Am I the only one that, you know, reads trashy magazines and always goes for the 10 ways of living a better life section? Yeah. You know, or 8 ways to solve your sleep problems, you know. I love that kind of stuff. Don't know why. I'm always looking for it. I was thinking, yeah, maybe they're going to have the answer in this magazine. I don't know. But there are. It'd save a lot of time, would it? Okay, so I've told you what the big one is. The big one is the exercise, movement, taking care of your body. If you want to have a healthy mind, healthy brain, remember that it's sort of encapsulated and these things are all related. But what else can you do? And these are the sorts of things that have come up. All right, here's a list. One is not all thoughts are equal. Okay, so it's okay to prioritise. One of the things that often I find is that I'll have a whole lot of thoughts and it's almost like they are all equal. It's one after the other. So it'll be sort of like, you know, get ready for work, phone grandchildren, do the washing up, worry about sick grandmother. They'll all come at once and they all seem to do the same. But they're actually not. So quite often what we would really help us is to plan, reflect, give us some time. And even questions like, what are the 3 things that I need to do today? Or what's really important right now? Will often help clarify your mind and help you to use your mind for what it's good for. Another trick, and this is again very interesting and possibly a little bit to do with personalities, is that it's actually very hard to think clearly if you live in mess and clutter. And again, I know that we were on the table I was sitting over here, we were talking about visiting other people's houses, namely, you know, our grandchildren or mining grandchildren, and sometimes feeling this immense urge to clean up before you can relax. Now, look, you know, there is a bigger story here, and we probably need to be sensitive to other people's personal space, but it's true, isn't it? You know, sometimes you can't get going until there's clarity, and there is some research to support that. So sometimes if you really can't, you're just feeling overwhelmed by stuff, maybe give yourselves 10 minutes to make sure that what you're seeing or what you're trying to work in is better. You know, so for some of us it is a tidy desk. Don't use it as a procrastination. That's not on. You know, you could actually spend 6 hours on tidying your desk. Don't do that. You know, but again, think about what might be needed to allow you to then do the job at hand. So there is a place for that. So, and that's why sometimes making a bed, what a crazy thing that is. Don't you think that's interesting? We make our beds every day. Why is that? You know, in case the burglars come and, you know, and thinking that you're messy. I don't know, but often it often just feels better, and maybe it helps clarify that that there is done. I'm now leaving the bedroom. I'm now leaving the bed. I'm moving into a different room. I don't know. Get to know the thinking distortions that you are likely to encounter. This will clarify your head. The kind of thinking distortions I have, for example, are often along the lines of "you're an idiot," or versions of that. I've been thinking of those things now for most of my life. It's probably not going to change. Now, sometimes I can wake up in the morning and think, oh, you're an idiot. Oh, come on. You know, push it back. So sometimes it's a not good enough. Sometimes it is, you know, the world is miserable and terrible and I'll never be happy kind of thing. But for a lot of us, it is that you're an idiot thing. And getting back to not all thoughts are equal, some thoughts are really like a broken record. You wake up in the morning, you think you're an idiot. Okay, go brush your teeth, move on. Sometimes you know that it is so disabling you need therapy, fine. But there are times when you're thinking, it's just crap. It's sitting there from long ago. It's a bad habit, whatever. So know your thinking distortions. And by the way, I don't wake up every morning thinking that. But I can assure you that if I'm tired or sick or have some kind of conflict in my life, the idiot thing comes up more. So what does that tell you? Take care of your body, then review the idiot thing, you know. Do them in that order. Your brain, your mind, your brain is a muscle. It needs exercise and it needs oxygen. So breathe. Breathe in, breathe out. And sometimes if you're really getting caught, I'm just thinking about crisis situations, and I've had people in hospital tell me this. I'm not the most relaxed looking of patients, you know. And I'll often be ridiculously bright and people say, she's far too happy for this situation. And they're probably right. And I found other people tell me sometimes you can't even remember to breathe and you need other people to tell you. That's fine. Go with it. Remember that in order to cope with the situation you're in, if you're going to be able to think, reflect, respond appropriately, look after the muscles. Breathe in, breathe out. Let the oxygen circulate. And then if you have a problem, then solve your problem. If you still think you need to get out, well, get out then. Does that make sense? Stretch, move and walk. Eat well, sleep well, live well. Our minds and bodies are not two separate entities. Each one relies on the other. Less screen time is a good time. So clutter, one of the things I'm fascinated, and who knows how it will turn out, is whether or not people's lives are more intruded upon and whether that's good for the brain because there's no time for reflection. We're not really sure, but when I hear about why people can't turn off their phones or spend time away from a screen, I'm a little worried about the motivation. It's often it does often have a sense of compulsion about it. And that's the bit that bothers me because then people aren't thinking about what they're doing. And sometimes it's a fear of missing out, FOMO. You know, that if I'm not on the screen, if I'm not on Facebook, if I do not reply, then I'm going to miss out on something. So again, I'm thinking about the psychology of it or why we would do it. So I'm not absolutely sure that screens themselves are the devil, but they may not be helpful for us in terms of looking after our minds. The other thing is that we are people who are moved by images. That's why movies work. That's why advertising works. And it does work, which I think is amazing. Why don't we use that more for good and not for evil? So it is really important to think about what you're watching and what you will allow to move you because it becomes part of you in some ways. Keep in mind, you cannot please everyone. This is why our heads are so full and our to-do lists are so long. Sad but true. If I had my way, we could please everyone, but I'm not God. And living in the future is the other thing that is a problem with your mind. You've got enough to do and to think about right now. If you're only ever thinking about the future, you're missing out on the present and it is not helpful. Often therapy is about people living too much in the past. Sometimes it's also about living too much in the future. So you do need to have a good mind, don't you, to make all of these decisions and sort them out. So a conundrum. I'll share you with my conundrum. If we know all of this, why don't we do it? Even while I'm talking here, your mind is working, you're reflecting, you're probably multitasking as well. You know, I'm sure if some of you are thinking about what you're doing after this. And I think that's fascinating. I think don't be too frightened of your ability to do so many things at once, but you are able to prioritise and shove them around, and we can learn to do better at that. And there are exercises. We have a vast amount of information if you find that it is hard to prioritise or do one thing at a time. Writing, making notes often helps because that sort of makes it much more physical, and you have to actually physically be concentrating in order to write something down. That's why it's often such a useful thing if you're wanting to concentrate on one thing at a time. But what stops us? I mean, I've sort of dropped, well, maybe it's a bit of a bombshell, maybe you already knew, that if you wanted a better mind and to be able to look after your mind better, you probably should review your exercise. Now, does that become a should? Is that just too hard? What do you think happens? And that becomes more of a motivational issue. So keep in mind that we know a lot of stuff. And I guess part of what I'd like you to think of is that how are you going to apply this talk? It may be that you think, I don't need to apply it at all. It was just interesting and stimulating. I think that's perfectly okay. But what if something I'm saying means that you would like to change the way you look after your mind a bit? That becomes a motivational issue. So I guess one of the things you might like to think about while I'm talking about is, if you were going to improve your mind, what would that look like? What would you actually do and what would stop you? So just have that sort of thought running along with you at the same time while I'm talking about this. Because that's a motivational thing. Is it important enough to change from something you do? Is it too hard? Do you need to sort of weigh up the pros and cons? Do you feel like you would fail if you tried to look after your mind better? Do you need more information? Perhaps you'll think, you'll take all this seriously, but when they show Retrain Your Brain on the ABC, maybe you'll watch it. You know, that's all you can do right now. You can't promise to start taking more walks, but you could do that. Maybe some of you are thinking, well, it's all very well for Sue, but I actually can't walk. Hip's gone. I've got emphysema, can't do the stairs, I have chronic pain, can't do it. You know, so have a think about what would be the block, if you like, because again, this is not, a healthy mind is not just about giving you information. You then have to use it and apply it and evaluate it. So that's also one of the things you need to be thinking about. One of the things I said to you would be, I actually started to think about, well, what if we actually took this stuff seriously as spiritual beings, as Christians, as people who long to have the mind of Christ, if you like, to be thinking more in tune with what God wants for us and for this world? I was very aware that my husband and I often have noticed that he and I have very different ways of approaching things like reading the Bible and studying, and a good spiritual practice like attending a church service or going to a Bible study group. Are we still learning from those sorts of spiritual practices, if you like, and if we can do it better? So here's the bit where I just go completely crazy here. All right, so tell me what you think of this. We know that in order to improve memories, we need to stimulate the brain and that we need to move. I wonder if instead of just meeting a girlfriend for coffee for prayer time, we should go for a walk, pray while we're allowed, while we're walking on the beach. I wonder if that would work. If we're meeting in a place for a Bible study and we've been doing it for 30 years from 7:30 till 9:00 on a Tuesday night, do you think maybe we should change? Should we experiment with the times, knowing how important it is to eat well, drink well and have a decent sleep? Is it very important as Bible study leaders and people who go to Bible studies to ensure that people aren't kept up all night? Do we need to meet earlier for Bible study and ensure that we finish on time? Do we need to sometimes change the types of passages, the types of Bible translations which we prefer, and just mess with our minds a little, just to remind us why we particularly like that version, not the others? If we normally read just silently to ourselves, is it time to start reading aloud? And I don't say this lightly. You know, if you've been meeting with the same group of people for 20, 30 years, what would happen if you changed and met with somebody else? Ooh. What if we move more? What if, I mean, this is not an option for everybody, but, you know, occasionally I play with this and I found it's quite a different experience. If you live close enough to a church or a Bible study place or something, have you thought about allowing more time in walking to it or walking from it or walking and praying or walking and listening to the Bible being read? All those sorts of things. When I actually started going through this, my husband said, yeah, is there a place for interpretive dance? and wouldn't that mess with you? I mean, is it okay sometimes to, I guess, open yourselves up to going to a church that does things differently? It'll feel different, or going something you normally wouldn't do. I'm not saying that you have to change everything, because habits are actually very valuable. I love my habits. As I get older, I'm getting more and more stuck in my ways. But we're talking about looking after our minds and thinking differently and reflecting on things. Is there a place to laugh out loud? Do we need more Christian comedians? Yes. One of the things which actually helps a lot is learning a new language. Well, ladies, what about New Testament Greek? Does that fit in as a new language? I think so, don't you think? You know, let's forget Spanish. Let's go for New Testament Greek. What about, you know, we know that people are very important. So, again, if you normally have I'm just thinking about the way that I have my spiritual practice and the way that I meet for my personal Bible study. We all love our little habits, but now and again, it's really got to, can you do it differently? If you've been using, say, a Bible reading guide for 20 years, and I hate to say this because I love our Bible reading guide, but can you change it for a year and just see if that gives you something new and fresh and different? Which is really rotten on the people who do this stuff. But you know what I'm talking about? Just ask yourself these questions. Are you falling into unhelpful habits so you're no longer thinking? That's what I'm actually saying. Read different books. Listen to a book rather than reading it. Have it read to you. We know, for example, psychologically, that meditation seems to be particularly good for the mind. One of the things that really bothers me is that the Buddhists are claiming meditation. That's just crazy. There is a long Christian tradition of spiritual practices that include meditation. Look into them. Have you ever been for a retreat? Do you go to a Bible study where everybody chats a lot and there's a lot of talking? What would happen if you decided one time you're not? You're simply going to read the passages and then shut up and just sit with each other for a while. And I'm thinking, particularly as evangelicals, that's almost impossible, isn't it? Why is that? Why do we allow talk to get in the way of reading and reflection? And again, as remember, there's many other Christian traditions that have times of quietness and peace. While I was thinking about this, I was thinking about when I was a child, I grew up in a faith tradition that would have a time of prayer and even a song, a spiritual song, before we finished our church services. And then there would be a moment of peace. Everyone would sit down again. And as a child, I thought that was a bit weird. As I got older, I appreciated it more and more, that I needed to reflect on what had happened and that I was about to leave one place and go to another. So have a think about how you can even change with what you normally do after church. Is your mind so full of what you need to do next that you're not reflecting on what you have done and learnt from? So that's me just brainstorming. Okay, so where are we now? Okay, can I suggest, because I'd like to practice a few things here. Just a quote here. This is from Alzheimer's Australia. If we could get just 5% of Australians who currently do little or very little exercise to engage in regular exercise, the number of cases of dementia in the future would reduce dramatically. So I want to try to practice what I preach here. So I guess what I'm going to suggest is can we have, and I'll time it so we don't all go mad, just a few minutes of reflection, because this is one of the biggest memory strategies out, is to give yourself time to process and to think. So what I would like to suggest is that we have just a couple of minutes, not a really long time, that you can reflect on what I've said in any way you want. You might want to just review your notes. You just might want to sit and think about how you're feeling. You might want to do what I've suggested before and think about what can I take away from today? You know, if someone in your family asks you what I spoke about today, what are you going to tell them? That's number one. But the other thing you could think about is what will I change? And again, don't beat yourself up. This is just an experiment or a time of reflection. So that's what I'd like to do is have just a couple of minutes. Then I can check. I can ask if there's any questions. And then I simply want to read out to you one of my favourite songs to finish. So that's where I'm heading. So far, so good. So let's just try to practice a little bit and see what happens. So just a couple of minutes of reflection, of thinking about what are you going to take away from today, or if you were going to take better care of your mind, what would it be? So just a few moments of just sitting. Okay, well, thank you for indulging me. I'm actually someone who finds silence very difficult, so I do use a timer sometimes. One of my challenges for this year is to take myself on a retreat. I wonder how I'll go. Let me read to you. The other thing, for those of you who love music and love some and find songs and hymns helpful, the other way that sometimes we can mess with our minds is do exactly what I'm going to do now, is I'm going to read this out rather than singing it. And we're just going to read the words, because some of the ways, sometimes that will just mess with our brains just a little bit and we get something more out of it, because it's all about having a healthy mind, a healthy brain. And this is, again, is one of my favourites. May the mind of Christ my Saviour live in me from day to day, by his love and power controlling all I do and say. May the word of God dwell richly in my heart from hour to hour, so that all may see I triumph only through his power. May the peace of God my Father rule my life in everything, that I may be calm to comfort sick and sorrowing. May the love of Jesus fill me as the waters fill the sea. Him exalting, self-abasing, this is victory. May, that's for the runners, may I run the race before me, strong and brave to face the foe, looking only unto Jesus as I onward go. May his beauty rest upon me. I didn't know this was going to happen. As I seek his lost, the lost to win. And may they forget the channel, seeing only him. Thank you.